The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, 65 years, a Tampa tradition, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, BillCurryFord.com, third generation family dealership. They present all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. And thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration, 5-star Google reviews across the board. If you have any kind of storm damage, flood, fire, mold, water damage, call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately, floridaselite-restoration.com.
I'll trade you those guys for Bullock and Jackson.
Buccaneers fans, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is on, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, himself the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, the water damage whisperer. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here, and a special edition, Todd Bowles on the podcast today. They're all special, but a little extra special, of course, when the head coach is here. Ira, we're at $1, but it's the bye week. What are we doing wrong?
I'm here for the food. I don't know about you guys.
We are presented by Bill Curry Ford, which is right up the street on Dale Mabry Highway, a mile north of right here where we are at $1. And general manager Sean Sullivan is there to take care of every single Bucks fan. And I want to focus on that because you don't have that at other dealerships, where the big boss is going to be happy to talk to you about the Bucks, happy to be talking to you about all of your vehicle needs. You can email him. You can find him right at the website, BillCurryFord.com. He's going to give you an Ira Kaufman discount or Joe Bucks fan discount if you ask for one, and that can apply to anything. He's going to hook you up. Sean talks about this on his Best in Class podcast that you need to be listening to, where he's our draft guru who runs around the league each week looking at young players and their performances. He says it right there. Reach out. I'm going to make sure you're taken care of like family. Not that they don't treat everyone like family, but you're going to get a discount, and Sean will be straight with you if you just have questions. He's not going to squeeze you into a private room and force you to pull out your credit card or something like that. BillCurryFord.com, family owned since 1960. They're celebrating their 65th year, and they still have, Ira, as we speak, zero money down, 0% financing, and zero payments for 90 days, and many other zero down lease deals on top of that.
And more than 600 vehicles in the inventory.
You like that number?
I do. I like that number.
So 200 would impress
60
you?
Years, 600 cars. That's perfect math.
There you go. BillCurryFord.com. They present all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. And we've got Todd Bowles today, Ira, on the Ira Kaufman Podcast.
Got him for an extended period too, Steve. You gave me a warning beforehand. Don't say, let's wrap this up, Todd. Don't do that,
I
Ira.
Did. I said, Ira, whatever you do, don't say, well, Todd, I know you got a lot of things on your plate. Don't do that. You know what?
We can't thank him enough.
We got a lot of fun stuff here. There's a couple of meaty nuggets in there, especially if you wait till the end. Scary one at that as well. We can talk about that after we talk to Todd. Of course, we recorded that a little bit earlier. And Lee was up in New Orleans. And what do we need to know about your trip up there, Lee? Your takeaways from that?
Did you weigh yourself after you got back home, Lee? Did you put on a pound?
Well, I think it was actually 5 pounds.
Don't get on that scale, Lee. Don't do it.
Gumbo shop 3 times.
Wow, 3 times.
3 times. Wow.
Same order all 3 times?
Variants. One time was a cup of jambalaya. The other time was a cup of jumbo. Same thing.
No Mothers. Variants. You didn't go to Mothers.
No. Borderline touristy. It's not bad. But like Parkway Bakery, if you're looking for po' boys, that's a whole lot better. But it's a mess. Parkway Bakery, I mean, make sure you get a spoon, because half your sandwich is going to be on.
Lee, is the Superdome past its expiration date? Do we need a new a venue over there?
I always refer to it as Lincoln's Tomb, because it reminds me of the time I visited Lincoln's Tomb. It was very dark. And that's what that place reminds me of, a tomb.
Was there jubilation in the Buck locker room post-game?
You took the words out of my mouth. Yes and no. When they came off the field, it was very businesslike, almost like relief, like we got to the bye. And there was no exuberance. But in the locker room, I don't know, maybe Bowles said something, maybe a player said something. At one point, there was, but not that much. And I was a little bit surprised by that. I don't know if that's a veteran team that expects to win. I don't know if that's that kind of reaction, but it wasn't over the top. No way. And it wasn't even close.
Did you get the feeling that the bye week couldn't have happened at a better time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that again, that was the reaction I had when I saw those guys come up the field, very, not dour, but it's almost like a business-like attitude. Like, okay, we did it, next. And I just thought that it seemed almost like relief that, Okay, we made it to the bye. Thank goodness. Not what I expected. I expected to be going crazy. You know, I know they hate the Saints. They always talk about how much they hate the Saints. And then here they pounded the Saints, and it was like no big deal. You know, goal line stand was just nauseating to watch in person. It was nauseating.
But that's why the timing of the Nelson interception was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, because the Saints had momentum at that time.
Yeah, they did, and I don't know what you guys, I didn't get the chance, I will, did get a chance to listen to your podcast earlier this week, but I just had flashbacks of Greg Schiano. There was a game, I can't remember who the Bucks were playing, Vincent Jackson got tackled on the goal line, and I think it was the same situation. Did they get like 7 or 8 tries, and they couldn't punch it in? And that's what that reminded me of. It was like Schiano was like, okay, we're men, we're going to put our tool on the table, and we're going to show you. And that's exactly what that reminded me of. It took a third effort. It took a third effort by Sean Tucker to get that thing in. I noticed Steve was commenting on Twitter. I felt the same thing. Try something different. What are you throwing a Mike Evans 50-50 shot to a short receiver for? That damn near was a pickoff. Damn near was a pickoff.
That could have been a pick.
Yes, Steve. That was a...
Both of them.
Yeah, that was a stupid call. And I'm like, why not Vita Vea? Why not... You got a mobile quarterback, roll him out. I mean, it was just unimaginative, stubborn, damn near cost him, but the defense played lights out.
Well, Steve made an interesting point, Lee, about Mayfield, you know, trying to hurdle over the pile. The fact they didn't do that means
he's hurt,
that
he,
yeah, he's hurt.
He's banged he's up.
Yeah, yeah, the fact that they had 8 shots and no quarterback sneak from inside the one most of the time, that should tell you all you need to know. And we ask in our interview coming up with Todd Bowles, we talk about Sage presses the coach on Mayfield's health and, you know, maybe a little bit more of what they're actually revealing. And coach answered that, I thought, pretty candidly.
He did.
And so that'll be exciting. Lee, what else did you have a big takeaway on? And I'm glad you brought up the, you know, we obviously talked about it, but I'm glad you brought up the goal line situation on offense, because I watched it a few times now. It really is such a fail on so many levels.
Yes.
From, as Ira and I talked about, Todd Bowles, call timeout. It didn't work 3 times in a row. Regroup. Hear what Mayfield has to say. Let him talk to your offensive coordinator. They didn't try anything different.
There was no push up front, Lee. There was no push.
They got to have plays in the playbook which are, you know, spread them out wide and let's run up the middle to a less tight tight box situation. Yeah. You know, it was bad, and hopefully they learned a lot.
To your question, Ira, I don't know if this came over the broadcast or not. Number one, Tristan Wirfs may have had his worst game in the NFL.
How was he post-game?
I didn't talk to him. He seemed okay, but I didn't talk to him. I was more worried about Nelson and Winfield and a couple other guys, Otten. And Graham Barton was getting blown up.
He was.
Graham Barton was getting blown up. And, you know, it's arguably your 2 best offensive linemen. So if those guys are having a rotten day, you can imagine what the entire line was having. It was not pretty.
They went over Feeney for getting the touchdown to Tucker.
Yes, he did.
That it went over.
I mean, that was sad to see Werps getting turned around like he was, and Barton getting bull rushed. He almost got knocked on his back once.
I thought Mayfield got pressured a lot in the first half, Steve.
Yeah, look.
They threw some blitzes at him there.
The offense fell apart.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of weeks in a row, I'm going to just hope that a lot of it's tied to the quarterback and whatever his physical limitations have been. In addition to, you can't pretend. You look at the Bucs' record without Mike Evans, it's horrible. Now, they did win one game without him this year, and we saw them win, obviously, the other day. That would be the second one. But the offense itself, you know, they need...
I think getting Irving back is critical, Lee. I just think it's critical.
It's critical, but you know what? I'm starting to wonder if, you know, we always hear copycat league, copycat league, copycat league. Against Detroit, Wirfs didn't have a great game.
He did.
And they got pressure on Baker Mayfield. Now, that's Detroit. It's a hell of a team. The Saints, as Steve has pointed out, aren't even remotely in the same class as Detroit, and they blew up the offensive line. So I don't know if there's something on tape that the Lions found and the Saints are copying and that the Patriots will copy. I don't know, but I get the whiff that there might be.
You know, you watch the NFL across every week. There's a lot of easy completions out there, a lot of pitch and catch. One of the things we talked to Todd Bowles about that he brings up is how quickly the ball is coming out across the league.
He said 1.5, didn't he?
Yep.
I think he exaggerated a little bit because they have the metrics. You can read them on NFL.com on the next gen stats. But yeah, there are probably more plays where they are coming out faster. But the Bucs, nothing was easy. Nothing's been very easy for the Bucs.
You know, one standby, very much a positive lead, but not surprising because it's a trademark of a Bowles defense. It's tough to run against the Bucs. It's damn tough to run against the Bucs. The Saints didn't even try. Lee, I don't know what they were doing with Kamara.
I think he got hurt, didn't he?
I can't figure it out.
Didn't he get hurt?
Yeah, he came back.
Oh, he didn't come back?
I think he got 8 touches. I mean, to me, that was their best path to victory. He's not Kamara, 27 years old anymore, but he's still a quality player.
And that might be it. You know, he's an older guy. They don't want to get pounded.
Nobody runs on this team, Steve. Very, very few teams run.
Ira, since our sit-down with Todd Bowles was pre-recorded earlier, we just stepped out of that. We're going to go to that now, and then we'll come back afterwards and share a couple of reflections. But want to tease everybody so they listen all the way through. There's some serious news that comes out here later in the podcast, and a lot of really good stuff.
It shows a different side of Todd Bowles,
yeah,
Steve.
Definitely. Yeah,
even Cosmo made an appearance.
Cosmo
on
makes
the
an appearance on the podcast.
The hot tub. Yeah, you know, there's a lot there.
There is a lot there. Florida's Elite Restoration. Do not forget them. Anytime you have water damage, mold, fire, flood, storm damage, you call them immediately. 24/7, they will respond. And they'll have your information, and they'll be getting back to you within a matter of minutes, most of the time, to schedule a free inspection of your property, whatever that is. And that should make you feel comfortable. Florida's Elite Restoration, 5-star Google reviews across the board. And they are fantastic. You and I, Ira, have had dealings with them on a business side. We know many other people that have as well. And they're licensed mold remediation specialists. You don't want to mess around with mold. And they will give you the Ira Kaufman discount if you call, mention Ira when you first call, even if you're leaving a quick message. And eventually, if you need their services after the free inspection, they'll give you $500 back. Owner Josh Martin, he'll appear on our podcast soon to explain a little bit more.
Got a great crew too, Steve. He's got a great crew.
Talk a little Bucks, because we really want to get that fan perspective, and I think Josh is the perfect fan. Not that Sean Sullivan isn't, but he's become media at this point.
Yeah.
So here is the head coach, Ira.
In the flesh.
At one buck, in the flesh. All right, Ira, here he is, the head coach, 6-2. They're trumpeting him out there as coach of the year halfway through the season. And he's Todd Bowles. Todd, welcome to the Ira Kaufman podcast. Always the highlight of your year, I think. We last saw you at training camp. Things are looking good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing well.
You're climbing up in our polls over there, the Todd Bowles poll. I see a lot of very confidence. I see confident. So take that to the bank, baby.
Oh, I'll take it, Ira.
Well, Coach, we'll let the sage of Tampa Bay Sports here playing with his microphone as usual start it off, and we got some questions for you.
All right, yeah. I start with a softball over here for Mr. Bowles. What kind of job have your assistant coaches done in getting guys ready to play in this crazy season?
I really think they've done an outstanding job. I mean, it dates back to last year when the DBs went down, and now the offensive line going down, the receivers going down, the running back going down. I mean, there's a lot of people going down in a lot of spots. Carbs, the offensive line coach in Pacucci, B-Mac, the receiver coach. Obviously, Ross and Rapone, the DB coaches, are doing a heck of a job getting these guys ready week in and week out. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, and there's a lot of moving parts, especially on the offensive line when your center starts playing tackle and your guard play center, and then the other three new guys, the guys are new. That's a very complicated thing to do and still try and win a ball game. And I think those guys have done an excellent job.
What kind of skill set does that take, Todd, to be able to work with backups and get them ready?
You got to be determined. You got to be able to teach. You really got to be able to teach, and you got to be able to relate to the entire group. So if you're not a people person, I know a lot of people can only teach one way. You got to be able to teach many different ways, and you got to be able to understand what their talent level is that helped them make this team, and then apply that into your game plan and to how you teach them so they can be successful on the field. So that takes a lot of work.
Todd, you're 4-1 on the road. It's the second best road record in the league. You don't want to hear this, but New England's number one. They're 4-0. And you know, he's doing a great job over there. And Steve tells me that going back to last season, you're 9-4 on the road. I mean, that's a strong record. So what do you attribute that to, and how do you get these guys to keep their focus and avoid distractions?
I think part of it is getting away for a couple days in training camp, bringing us up to Pittsburgh for 4 days, which was like an old school training camp, just hotel-wise. I'm not saying practice-wise or anything like that, but it gets us focused, you know, here in Tampa when you have camp every day and you have some curfew nights and you have some home nights and everybody has kids. It kind of gets you locked in and focused on what you have to do. So the mental part of it gets locked in, and they get to be around each other a lot more because in the off season, you know, it's not mandatory. So everybody's not here. So everybody doesn't get to know everybody. And then training camp, is such a blur when you're just going to practice and going back to the room. So they really get to spend time around each other and get to know each other. And that's where the chemistry really starts to kick in and the trust starts to kick in.
Is that kind of a carryover, not just last year with the hurricane when you guys had to go to New Orleans and hang out, for lack of a better term, but I remember when you went to Munich and the video clip of you in the locker room after the game, you thanked them for not treating it as a tourist trip. You were speaking to the players. You treated it as a business trip. Is that just something you instilled upon this team that's carried over? Then last year, of course, you were, you know, displaced for a few extra days. Very similarly, you go up to Pittsburgh for a couple extra days. You were in New Orleans for a few extra days. Is that kind of a carryover, a habit, a culture thing?
We kind of attribute that to sudden change on the field. When things happen, you have to be ready to adjust. When you play a Monday night game or a 4 o'clock game or a 1 o'clock game, or if there's lightning delay, or if you have to travel and something's wrong with the plane or anything like that. So we try to make sure they adjust. And these guys got plenty of money. You got plenty of time to go overseas if you want to see Munich and all those other places. You can go 11 and a half months out of the year. So don't sit there and tell me you've been waiting to go over there. You would have been over there already. So we try to make it a business trip that way. I mean, if you can go sightseeing for a little bit and see some things, that's fine. But don't turn it into a vacation is really what we're talking about, because we understand why we went over there. So, and the veterans are very mature in that and helping the young guys do that. And that's kind of what I mean by that.
You mentioned old school hotel situation. So I got to ask, because it was a beautiful hotel. I was staying at a not so nice place across the street. what do you mean? What does that mean when you say that? Is it curfews or is it everybody having
a
roommate?
Curfews and eating meals together and getting on the bus, going to practice together, and just old school football, carrying your pads and kind of going back to the room and showering, going to the meetings. And that's really all there is to do. So that's what I mean by the old school part of it.
I got it. Okay.
Todd, this is kind of a philosophical question, not necessarily about the Bucs. I heard Greg Olsen, the Fox, former tight end, and he was saying you're going to see more teams going for it on fourth down, especially when you're in the opponent's territory. And he said the reason for that is field goals are so cheap now, it's not worth it to kick a field goal. For example, what he said was, okay, let's say you kick a field goal, 3 points. All right. The other team could very easily get the ball back on the 35 if the kickoff is out of bounds. And he said the way guys are kicking now, 2 first downs, you're in field goal range.
That's very true. Because the ball's coming out to the 35 minimum for the most part, unless guys have a good dirty kicker that can kick the ball down right there and the ball goes other ways. So you're starting right now, they're kicking 70-yarders. I mean, 68-yarders. So you get the midfield, or even the minus 48, that ball's getting kicked and put up there. So when you cross midfield, anything less than 4th and 7, 4th and 6, you're probably taking a shot at it.
Wow.
Because they don't have too far to go. It all depends on how your offense is playing, obviously. Now, if they're killing you and you're not getting any yards, then you think twice about it. But if you're fairly in the flow of the game and saying, well, if we punt it, if it goes in the end zone, it comes back out, we're really punting it about 20, 25
right
yards. So you have to think about all those things and go for it. And a lot more teams are going for it. So now third down is really second down. So you see a lot more runs on third down because they know they're going for it on fourth down. Yeah. It's not like it's 3rd and 9 and you say, oh, we got to protect the sticks. No, because they get 4 yards and make it 4th and 4. And that's their third down. So as a defensive coach, you have to think differently. And offensive coaches are thinking a lot differently. And, it's really a different part of the game that nobody really sees.
Does it kind of feel a little strange that you have the best long distance kicker in the game in a year where everybody's now kicking him?
It's almost like he's becoming extinct, because he hit 350-yarders and their guy's hitting 60-plus and 70-yarders. And it's like, wow, I only goes 50. The 40s used to be tough.
Sure.
Now the 50s are supposedly chip shots in the league right now. So it's a really different phenomenon going on with these kickers right now, and they're really booting them out. I'm scared when the kickoff guy starts putting them through the upright and they start counting them, then we're really in trouble.
Coach, every team, every coach seeks the perfect formula to prepare a team for the regular season. And you've had 4 consecutive seasons starting 2-0. Do you feel like you've found that perfect formula? And have you changed a lot from when you were with the Jets to basically Todd Bowles' team is always ready first couple of weeks of the season?
I've definitely changed a lot from when I was with the Jets, because you learn a lot as you become a coach, and you learn a lot every year. So You learn what you want to do, what not to do, what to do, but then you got to have the type of team that you want to have. Then you got to have the kind of culture and atmosphere you want to have. So for us, starting off fast is really just a maturity thing. It's really making them understand that it's going to be a long season, but we got to go week by week. And we try not to see, I think in the past, we used to see who we were playing the next week, or this is a tough game, or this is an easy game. We were going into this year harping on, we don't care who we play. It comes with the first place schedule, so it's going to be tough every year. You're going to play first place teams every year. Now, whether they end up being that way, that's one thing, but you know you have, and we seem to all get them in a gauntlet. Like last year, I know we had Philly and Baltimore and Detroit and Kansas City and San Francisco, and it was like, wow, this, and it usually comes in the beginning of October for us, so.
Well, you got one in the next 3 weeks, right,
yeah,
Todd?
Yeah, we had some just in the past, so we don't worry about it anymore, and we've embraced this comes with a first place schedule. We understand to win, we have to play these teams and beat these teams and win the close game. So now it's not getting high and low for who we're playing. It's being steady all the way through and being consistent in everything that we do. And we feel like we've done that so far.
Do you think some of that applied to night games where maybe players were looking at them a little bit differently, you know, versus just we don't care when we play?
We have a night practice, and you try to prepare as much as you can for the night games. They're all different from a night standpoint. That's just a matter of getting rest and getting your mind right and then making sure you're ready to play. So all the night games are huge because you're the only game in town.
Todd, how much does this offense miss Bucky Irving, what he brings to the table, especially the last couple of weeks? How eager are you to get him back?
Well, not just Bucky. You know, we're missing the right side of our line still. Bucky was our best make you miss guy, so to speak. He could make you miss in the open field and in the hole. So he got extra yards because he was more jittery and one cut and still full speed. They're all different kind of running backs. The other two are very good as well, but Bucky could make one or two guys miss and make you miss and make the O-line look a little better. So you miss that type of dynamic, I think, when you're talking about our offense.
Could the bye week have come at a better time for Baker Mayfield? All things considered, Todd, he looks a little beat up.
I think it came at the perfect time for Bake. Bake's going to battle his butt off, and he's never going to say anything. But for him to get some rest and get healed up, hopefully as much as he can, I think it came at a perfect time.
You know, Steve mentioned to me, I didn't even realize this, Todd, but the last 2 weeks, he hasn't done some of those fantastic third down runs. And we're thinking, you know, maybe that's an indication of some physical limitations on him the last couple of weeks. Is that reading too much into it, or is he a little battered?
Well, he's a little battered. He's more battered than just taking off and running. Detroit did a good job of keeping him in the pocket, and they're blitzing him not to sack him, but to take away the rush lanes that he can get out of. So they've taken away some of those, and they've done a good job at that. But we don't want him to run, but when he has to run and he has to make a play, the holes weren't there from that standpoint, but he is a little beat up.
Todd, here's another Baker question for you. Wirfs was on Busing with the Boys, and Will Compton and and Taylor Lewan. And Lewan and Wirfs were talking about how it really drives them nuts when they'll be watching a game and a quarterback gets to a hassle or gets, you know, something happens to him, and that the entire offensive line does not protect the quarterback. They don't go after the defenders. And they got into a story about Baker. And, you know, Wirfs was saying how everybody loves Baker, how, you know, he galvanizes the team. And Wirfs said last year, the second New Orleans game, I believe it was a home game, the team came out flat. Matter of fact, I think you said people could get their head out of their ass when they talked to you at halftime coming out the field. It was that game. And Wirfs said some of the bickering, for lack of a better term, with the defense, between Baker and the defense. Baker does it on purpose sometimes. And he cited the Saints game. He said they were dead. And Mayfield, on purpose, got the defenders to go after him. And in Wirfs' words, not mine, an explosion occurred. And he said, you look on the film, you see Baker walking away from the dust up like no big deal. Does he do that more often than not, like try to spark the offense and entice the defense?
I think he does it when necessary. Okay. You know, he gets caught up in the game as well, but when he sees it's flat and he tries to motivate himself, and then in that case, instead of yelling at everybody, he motivates others by doing that part of it. I don't think it comes out much, but 99% of it's natural. And then there's another percent that when he sees it and he starts it just to get everybody else going and gets juiced up, he can – facilitate that a little bit to get everybody else behind him.
So it's strategic.
Like, okay,
it's strategic.
We're ready to play. Yeah. So he's a very strategic guy.
Is there a guy on defense who mirrors that in the same kind of way?
For the most part, they pick themselves up. It's Levante, Wynn, and Vita. There's a lot more vocal guys defensively than there are offensively. Now, they're a tight-knit unit on offense, but they're a lot more vocal guys on defense. And that kind of take the bull by the horn and kind of take care of that.
You happy with your defense? I mean, the way they played against New Orleans is like sharks smelled blood.
We got better. We didn't give up any big plays. That was our number one thing going into that game. Don't give up any big plays. If we can eliminate that, those two and three, and eliminate the big plays every week, we'll be a very good defense.
And, of course, you got the takeaways.
The defense was kind of Jekyll and Hyde early in the season. In the last two games, it certainly looks dominant in many ways, or more of a complete game. What's been the biggest difference, do you think, the last couple of games?
Settling down, and everybody's not trying to do too much. Everybody's doing their job, and they're trusting each other more. And, again, not giving up the big plays and understanding situations. We've gotten smarter from a defensive standpoint, and that really helps out.
Steve brought up defense, and Ira brought up takeaways, which reminds me, that Winfield, he got robbed on that scoop and score fumble recovery. You said you were going to have a chat with the league. Did you have that chat, and what was the nature of the feedback you got?
We definitely had that chat, and it was good. It was good. They were good. I mean, they want to get it right as well, and they understand some of them guys make mistakes, and we're trying to look better at it going forward, and those things can happen. We understand that.
Todd, speaking of Winfield, I've been taking a couple pot shots, as is my custom. Not saying he was playing bad, but I didn't notice him as much as, you and I think he should be noticed in terms of impact. How gratifying was it to see him have that kind of an impact last week?
Oh, it was great. I mean, he has an impact for us every week. Sometimes he has to cover for other people and what we were doing schematically. But we put him down closer to the line of scrimmage, as we try to often do. With guys hurt, we try to juggle things around with younger corners and everything else. But we decide to let him play, and he goes out, and they ruled them two touchdowns. He would have been player of the week as opposed to Nelson, because he would have had a whale of a ball game, and that people would be talking about that. And it's unfortunate he got the pick and the fumble, but he should have had 14 points.
I know you're not one to brag about it, Todd, but I'm not sure you'd swap your safety tandem for anybody else's. I think you're pretty proud of those two guys.
Very happy with those guys. Those guys play good. They ball. They come to practice every day, and they're very good tacklers.
Real quick question about Winfield. You mentioned him playing closer to the line and inside. A couple of years ago, he had some concussion issues. Is that a concern about playing him inside or closer to the line that maybe he might get dinged up again?
No. And close to the line doesn't mean every down. It could be third down. As long as you put him down there in certain situations and pass situations, because when he's down there, he's such a great blitzer. You have to account for him. You have to notice him. That doesn't mean it's a rock'em sock'em game and he's getting knocked all over the place. Just down closer to the line of scrimmage means moving him around a little more, letting everybody see where he is and kind of take the shots as you get them.
All right, Coach, you got to put Ira in his place a little bit. Before the season, and you knew this because we had told you, but before the season, Jamel Dean, get him out of here, I'm done. I'd say about 40% of the fans are with him, and now Jamel's had this revival kind of year. He talked on the Buccaneers Radio Network a few weeks ago, Jamel, that he lost body fat and had studied that in the offseason, and he feels so much better, almost more like a younger player because of that. But we were shocked because he's not exactly a guy who's not fit.
Yeah.
He's an extremely fit guy. So where did Ira get it wrong, and what's been the difference really that you can explain about Jamel?
Well, he's been healthy, number one. He's really been healthy this year, and that was different to see. I could not see the body fat. He looks the same to me. I don't know. He ran a 4.31 with the body
fat.
Yeah,
it was shocking.
I don't know what that means from that standpoint. I think he's really been healthier, and he's really locked in mentally and defensively and understanding what he has to do and watching film a little bit more, and that's really kind of helping him out. The fact that he's catching the ball this year is a great joy for me to see, because in practice, he's let a few go, but he's really been turned into a pro's pro, and he really helps Morrison and Parrish out a great deal, and looks like he's enjoying playing because he's healthy, and he's in a good space right now, and I like where he's at.
Todd, every October.
He went easy on you, Ira.
He did. Thanks, buddy. Every October, I tell these two guys, you know, because the Bucks, they've played four games. They only got 9 sacks or whatever. And I say the same thing. By the end of the year, Bowles is going to have 45 to 50 sacks. That's just the way it is. Now, this year, you might have even more. I mean, you're on a heater. But you don't do it with the guy that has 18 and the next guy has 11. It's not like that anymore. It's not Shaq Barrett anymore. With JPP. So how do you do it, Todd? And you take any extra pride in having, you know, 7 guys with 4 or 5? And it's whatever you got to work with, right, Todd? But you want the total to be the total.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because when you rush 4 and they want to go down the field, they're blocking 7 to 8 guys. That makes it very hard for them. And then when you rush them and they spread you out, the ball's coming out of his hand in 1.5 seconds. We had so many free runners this year that didn't even get a whiff of the quarterback. So it's very hard to see, like, Shaq, what do you have, 18, 19?
19 and a half, yeah.
Now, I think if you get 13, really, wow, that's a banner year. You should be somewhere between 7 and 13, the way the ball's coming out these days. And some guys get lucky and they kind of hit because the quarterback's holding on to the ball, but you don't see the Aaron Donald 22 sacks and all that stuff anymore. And because the game has changed a little bit with all the screens and all the young quarterback coming out of college and they're getting the balls out of their hands faster. It's a little different dynamic. So you got to try to bait them into it. So we rush for quite a bit, but we try to bait them into seeing certain things and try to trick them with the coverage and make them hold on to the ball longer so we can get there. You know, there's so many different ways and variables that go into it.
Todd, in that sense, Steve, even more props to the Myles Garrett's of the world. I mean, Miles, I think he just had 5 last week.
He's a different guy. He's a different breed. And, you know, you got one of them guys or two of them guys that can really go out and beat singles, doubles, and triples.
You got Parsons,
He's one of them guys.
Yeah. So are you kind of saying that the game has made the edge rusher position a little less valuable because
not the game itself, but the way certain teams are playing now. The game is the game, and you got to get back there, and you got to rush no matter what, and we want to get the sacks all day long. But a lot of these plays come out so much faster now, and then there's so much more protection now, that it makes it a little bit harder. And I don't want to say it wasn't like that in the past because it probably was, but it's like it's paying more attention to there are so many one-and-done quarterbacks now going in the first round, and they can't possibly see a whole playbook, and they've never even seen a playbook, and you got to sit there and read defenses and make the huddle call and the audible. So there's got to be more friendly quarterback throws, I think.
To that point, is that one reason why you see a lot of quarterbacks, they don't make it with their first team, but they go to the second team or third team, and they blossom?
They're all different. I mean, some of them don't have the help that they want. Some of them, it may be a scheme. You know, you might do one thing in college and ask you to do something else in the pros. It might be schematically. Some of it might be coaches and the player, coach and the player. Some of they're all different from that way. But you really, after your third season, you should start seeing solid play. The first season, I mean, somebody might have a great rookie year, but the second year will tell the story because they got tape on you. And then you kind of go from there, and then there are your outliers like Mahomes, who's been great his whole life. And you have your outliers, but most of them are seeing all this for the first time. So either you got to be patient or you got to get them a lot of help early.
Is Dennis coming on a little bit, Todd, the last couple of weeks? Is he playing with more confidence?
He's really playing with more confidence. He's settled down. He's not antsy like he was. He comes out there very calm, and he's had a lot of tackles and made some plays for us the last 2 weeks, looking more like the guy that we thought we had. So pleased with that.
Speaking of confidence, it seems like Benjamin Morrison is playing with a little more confidence.
He is. You know, the first time he started playing really was his training camp the first couple of weeks because he hadn't played. He just hadn't played and hadn't been through it, so he had to get his body right and get his body healthy. So we throw him in there. He's first 2 plays he gets in there, he's a little antsy, but after that he settles down and he's playing some good football for us. And, you know, I like where he's at.
With the situation at right guard, do you see that as just an ongoing competition that's not going to stop? Or at some point, would you like to just plug a guy in there and realize, hey, there's not a lot of difference between these guys, but the continuity will benefit?
I would like to plug a guy in there, but we've got to have a guy to plug in there. I mean, Jordan got hurt, and Hager got hurt, and we got Feeney in there. So we would like to have more stability in there, but we got to keep these guys healthy too. So at the same time, Feeney didn't play bad. I mean, he was solid. He didn't embarrass us, and he's a vet. He's played before, so he knows what to do. So we'll see what.
Did the hair and the mustache take you back to your playing days?
Oh,
gosh.
He's doing us a favor sitting down with us.
No, I meant in general. His look is more of a 90s, 80s kind of look.
It's a 90s, 80s type of look, but I, for one, did not have a mullet cut, so I have seen them, and, he's an old school guy, so I'm going to respect him that way.
What was going through your mind in the first goal line stand when you didn't score? After the fourth, maybe the fifth play with the penalty, what was going through your mind? I mean, we got to punch it in there.
We got to be able to punch it in there, and we got to be able to punch it in there. The back's got to slam it in there. The line's got to block, and then we got to have the right call on, too. I mean, if they're packing it in there and we don't have it, you got to be able to do something else as well. We can't be stubborn and just beat our heads up against the wall. We got to understand that. So from a player's and a coaching standpoint, we got to be better.
Coach, the team entered this year with high expectations, higher than usual from the outside. Stock pick as the NFC South champ again, and great start. You've been playing as the hunted this year, at least from the media perception. Other teams look at the Bucks on a big pedestal. Have you felt that from other teams that, hey, they're coming in here giving us their A-plus game versus maybe before we just got their A game?
No, we feel like we're the hunters. We haven't even become the hunted. We haven't even played well enough to become hunted. We are hunting, and we are hunting 12 months out of the year, and that's the mindset we got to have and that we do have week in and week out, and that's how they started the first half of the season. That's how we got to play the second half of the season. We don't get hunted. We got to hunt, and the minute you stop hunting, you get killed.
2 years in a row, Todd, you've won more games than the year before. That doesn't sound, spectacular, but you look it up, and it doesn't happen that often in the league. And I know your ambition is to do it again this year and get 11-plus. You take any pride in that? I mean, that doesn't happen every day. It seems like the team's growing, and maybe you're growing too.
I'm definitely growing all the time. If you stop growing, you stop coaching. I think I heard Belichick say that once, but I don't really look at it. I think those are things you look at when you retire and you sit down and you look back on your career. I really try to look at the next day. How can I help the coaches be better? How can I get the players better? How can we win the ball game? And the key is to win ball games. You're going to win them differently every week. You're rarely going to be clicking on all three cylinders. The goal is by the end of the season that you're clicking on all three cylinders and got all three phases playing well and playing your best football. Right now we're building and we're on the way trying to do that. And whether the offense wins the game, the defense wins the game, or the special teams wins the game, everybody plays a part. We're just trying to be more consistent in what we do. So we went from last-minute wins to winning by a little more of a margin and winning by a little more of a margin. And so we're on the right track. We just have to come back with the right mindset and continue that track. And
what do you think of the challenge of these three games coming up? Look very challenging.
They're going to be tough. I mean, they're going to be tough, but we just played a few tough games. So, San Fran was no picnic. Seattle's
right.
Not a picnic. Atlanta's not a picnic. Houston's defense wasn't a picnic. Philadelphia wasn't a picnic. So they're going to be tough. Like I said, we came in first place the last couple of years. We get a first place schedule, so we play the first place teams. And we embrace that, and we look forward to it. And every week, we know we got to go out and play like a first place team.
Todd, you were talking about growing. You mentioned Belichick. Belichick was famous for bringing guys in. College coaches, heck, he even brought a high school coach in one time. I know your sons play college football. Do you ever find yourself, watching a college game and, man, that looks interesting, and you may investigate that or talk to a coach and just get a breakdown or even bring coaches in just to, chalk talk and pick their brains?
Not just college games, but high school games and 7-on-7 games.
Wow, 7-on-7.
7-on-7 because they play a lot of coverage. And you get to see the mix and match coverages at the whole scheme. And you be like, wow, that looks interesting. Or that's pretty good. Or that's pretty good. So I watch everything.
Wow.
I watch everything. And when I see certain teams have good blitz packages, you look at it and see how it will transform to the game and try to pick it up and do everything. That's the only way you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get stale being a coach. You have to change because the offenses and the defenses start to change every 2.5 years. You got to start to tweak the things that you do to fit the modern day game, or you're going to get left behind.
Coach, upstairs, is there like a wrestling mat on the ground? like a mat where you know, for the trade deadline where you're arguing and you got Jason Light on there. And can you just explain to fans how it kind of works, right? Because nobody can agree on 100% of the things, and clearly there's, you know, you have to gauge value, but it's coming up November 4th. I know you got some time off coming up, and games are hitting this weekend that could change the NFL. How does that all work here?
And GMs look at things a little different than coaches do, Todd. That's just the way it is.
They do, and we fought the other day because I'm trying to get Miles Garrett and trade him for our long snapper, Decker.
And a podcast to be named later.
And it's not a fair deal, but no, it's not just who's available. It's what you have to give up, whether it's draft picks or whether it's two or three starters, and then there's the money that's involved in it. Where's right. your cap at? How much are they making?
Right.
And if they're making a ton of money, and then are they going to be free next year? Is it a single contract?
Sure.
Are we renting this guy, or yes. are we keeping this guy? There's a whole bunch of variables that go into that, and I like my job, and it's very hard, but I would not want Jason's job because that's even harder, at least trying to look at all these guys and see what fits us and what you have to do. And then when the draft comes around, you get mad because you say, we gave him our draft pick for this guy and he didn't do anything. So
yeah.
there's a lot of variables that go into that. And everybody wants something, but they don't want to give up anything. So you can't get something for nothing in this league.
In the season, is it hard for you as a head coach to give a crap about next year when you're sitting here and it's October and you're six and two?
I wouldn't say it's hard to give a crap about next year because you're always aware. You're always aware of the cap situation and what you have and what you may have and what you may lose. So you look at it and you sit there at 6-2. You worry about the here and now from a game standpoint, but you also got to be logical and understand how the future is going to go, or at least have an idea. And then we talk about the future. It doesn't come into focus during the season, but you got to have at least an idea of what's going on.
And Todd, given Jason's success in the draft, you know, the last 3-4 years, he's hitting it out of the park, and you know that better than anybody. You do understand why he's reticent to give up draft picks, right? I mean, that's part of his job. He thinks he can hit it big in the fifth round.
I don't know. We have a great relationship, and we've hit it big in the fifth round. We got Zion in the fifth a few years ago. So it's very important for us to have draft picks and draft capital. If you sign all free agents, you won't have any money and you won't have any draft picks. And when guys get hurt, you can't just go out and get guys of equal money. You got to get lesser guys. So you got to be able to develop. We have a great relationship that way. We understand when we don't have guys and guys get hurt, and we try to fill in with the guys that we can and know what we can do to get by. And it takes some draft picks. It takes a few free agents. And then it takes some stars. So it's going to take all the above. You just can't go out and say, well, if we get this guy, we're going to the Super Bowl. You don't know that. You don't know that. So we got to kind of continue on our path, and it's been working for us very well. And, you know, we got to get people healthy. We understand that and how it aligns. But nobody's going to give us a
player. There's no Simeon Rice standing there ready to come in.
Nobody's going to say, you got Simeon Rice, you got Sapp, you got Barber, you got Brooks. And I'll trade you those guys for Bullock and Jackson, and we'll trade. And, you know, there's nobody giving us players. Nobody's going to help you out when you're winning. They're going to try to weaken you. So
there you go.
At the same time, we understand that. So, but he does a great job at putting it all in perspective. And, you know, and I admire him. I admire him a great deal.
Fifth round pick, Elijah Roberts. You know, you're leaning on him in a pinch.
Right now. That's yeah. exactly right. He's playing now. And then Tez went later than that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have guys. Our picks are valuable because we get players late. Nelson was a fourth round pick. So, mm-hmm. you know, we get
Nelson,
guys.
Nelson sitting over there, Todd? Which Nelson?
Not that Nelson. The 6'7 Nelson, not the 5'5 Nelson.
5'5.
That's the line of the day over there.
Sebastian Dennis, fifth round as well.
That's exactly right. So you gotta hit on a few of those players.
Real quick feedback on Elijah Roberts. How's, you know, as a rookie, being, you know, you're banking on him.
Banking on him a lot. I think he's really come a long way. He's really settling in. I was really proud of him last week against the Saints because his gap integrity was excellent, and he played the right way. And he really played the right way, and I was really proud. And he gives a damn. It means something to him, you know, every week. And he's a very good inside pass rusher. It hasn't shown yet because he's concentrating on the run, but he's got hands and he's got intelligence in there. And we expect him to be a factor inside for us.
Define for our listeners, what's the right way in your eyes?
He has the right temperament. He's playing fundamental and technique sound. Before, he was just coming off the ball and he'd get hooked or he'd get squeezed. If he brought his hands, he didn't bring his legs. If he brought his legs, he didn't bring his hands. Or he didn't play, have his head in the right gap, or he took a gamble here and there. But he's playing the right way now. He's playing fundamentally sound football. He's playing smart football. And then you're starting to see his ability start to come out of that and make his own plays within the scheme.
So, Coach, you notice we haven't asked you about injuries. We're not asking you.
I appreciate that.
We're not asking you who's in play.
Yeah, who's in play?
We're not asking you. But one injury question I felt I had to ask you because, you know, a lot of fans saw Jalen McMillan, that horrific injury. They watched it on TV. It was, you know, gripping. And everybody knows necks are serious when it comes to life, not just football. So is there any kind of an explanation that you can give the fans in general? What's going on with McMillan, you know, kind of where he's at?
Well, he's still in the brace, but he's getting better. He's getting better. But necks are not like ankles or arms where you see progress, where you can lift on them and work them out when you're still in the brace. And you say, oh, he looks good today. He's getting stronger. He's getting faster. It's a neck injury. And those, like you said, it's a life thing if it doesn't heal the right way. So they're saying it's healing the right way. They're saying he's coming along. He's feeling better. He's all smiles. I don't know what that means, honestly, because again, that until he puts on the helmet and it starts working out and everything else, you just don't know. But that, I don't know what getting better means as well, because they say, it's not like you can see inside the neck and say, well, he's moving it a lot better. I'm sure he can turn it, but it's just a matter of the bones healing the right way. And those are such difficult bones to judge when inside the neck. And I'm not in the medical profession, but he's coming along. I think he's in good spirits and I think he's getting a lot better. I just don't know how close.
So he had some broken bone related issues in there.
Got it. Todd, if you had to pick a Motown song, that's right. I'm not Jenna Lane, but I'm going with the Motown song. Todd, to sum up the first half of the season, would it be The Happening or Ain't No Mountain High Enough?
Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
How you feeling about where you sit? Long way to go.
Pleased where we're sitting, but a way, way long way to go. That's only half a season. We got a lot of football to play.
But you didn't shoot yourself in the foot. That's very
true. That's very true. And that from that standpoint, we're a lot better than we were.
Well, I just got one last general one. But first, I'll say thanks for joining us here.
Inviting
us to One Buck. Ira wants to invite you out to his house. That could be interesting.
I'm waiting for that invitation.
For that invitation.
There you go.
No cannoli, huh?
His dog's a jumper. He can't train his dog.
Yeah, little Cosmo's a jumper.
Uh-oh, yeah. Cosmo.
He's a Boston Terrier. All right, go ahead, Steve. What's your last one?
My last one is the 18-game season. A lot of fans see the chatter from the NFL. People know that that's eventually where it wants to go. You played in 93, which was when they had the two bye weeks.
Right.
The NFL experimented with that, and there was a lot of talk. If they go 18, it would be two bye weeks. What was your experience with that? What do you think of the whole 18-game season?
Right now, the way we're beat up, 18's a lot.
Yeah, that's why.
18's a lot. 18's a lot.
Two bye weeks is welcome.
Two bye weeks are definitely welcome right now as opposed to 18 games, but I don't know yet. I don't have a feeling about it. I think it's a long season with 17 games. I thought it was long with 16 games, but we'll see what the ramifications are.
They are trending in that direction. I keep hearing about it.
I haven't heard about it officially, so we'll see how what kind of grounds they come up with for us to go by and then kind of go from there. You know, there's really nothing you can do but coach your guys and get them ready and kind of go from there, whichever one is.
I can tell. I'm sorry to interrupt. I can tell you're highly enthusiastic about that concept. And to add to that, it seems speculation, but they'll use that extra game to have every team plays an international game once a year. Yeah, I can
another
see.
Another thing you're thrilled about.
I wish we had video of your reaction.
I keep hearing that. So I see it heading that way. I think there are like 15, 16 teams playing there this year. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be inevitable. And
I can't see you in Rio de Janeiro. I don't even want to picture
you
that.
You can in the summertime.
Oh, speaking of the summer, if you do go to Ira's house, go in the winter because he's got a hot tub. You don't want to see him in his
bathing. That's
right. I definitely don't want to see him in his bathing.
We've got
hot tub. What's he wearing? His clothes in the hot tub?
We got to thank Todd Bowles a ton for this.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely, Coach.
On his
absolutely.
Vacation, baby? Bye week?
You got any final thought for Ira, Coach?
I'm still trying to figure out the Cosmo thing. We talk about a Boston Terrier for a guy from New York.
I think Todd owes me because me getting on Jamel Dean's case, he probably listened to the podcast and said, I got to get my act together and shut the sage off over here. Thanks again.
Thanks
again, Todd.